Well, hello there. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Coming to you from the soggy Southlands, just outside of Birmingham, Alabama, from the Daily Perspective Studios, located deep in a bunker on the backside of a hill in Blount County, Alabama. Oh my gosh! Just as a heads up for today, let me warn you that the steroid shot is worn off, and I didn't get enough sleep last night, and I'm a little loopy today. Who knows what's going to happen? All I know is that here we are. It is the middle of the week. If you stand on your tiptoes and you can see through the rain and the wind and everything, you can see the weekend from here. But don't plan on going to the Gulf Coast, especially the Gulf Coast of Alabama. Our neighbors down there are getting pounded pretty hard even as we speak. The eye of the storm, is, as I understand it, has already crossed over Mobile, and they're on the backside of it now. It's bad. There's a lot of flooding, a lot of damage. There's, I think the number was 400,000 people without power, 400,000 customers without power. I think that's right. I could be wrong about that. I was kind of... I was reading something on one eye, and the other eye I had on the TV this morning, keeping up with the news, so I may be mistaken about that. But there are a lot of people in the state who don't have power today and won't have power for days to come, and sometimes weeks to come, depending on the amount of damage in their areas. Pretty rough time down there in the city of Mobile and the surrounding areas. So if you're a praying person, please pray for the folks in Mobile because they need your prayer support today. It's a nasty thing. I have family who's lived on the Gulf Coast for, well, all my life. And it's something that they sort of take in stride. Oh, yeah, it's a hurricane. And it's like it's no big deal. They weather the storm. They go without power. They have their generators. They know what's up. And afterwards, they all... fire up the chainsaws and get busy helping, they clear their yards and help their neighbors clear their yards. And it's a sight to behold. My dad lives down there. Now, my mom and dad got divorced years, decades ago. And she's still in the Birmingham area. And my dad is in Pensacola. And I doubt he's going to be out there with a chainsaw this time. He's in his mid-80s. And although I think he would love to do it, I don't think he's going to. Hopefully his neighbors around him will help him out this time. I'll be checking with him a little bit later in the day because and it's funny, every time I call him, so how you doing down there? Everything all right? Oh, we're good. We got a tree down in the backyard, but we're fine. And that's how it works usually for them. And, or my stepmom will answer the phone and she'll say, oh yeah, Wayne's out there. He's helping a neighbor cut a tree out of his yard or something like that. So, they just take it in stride and move along. But I'll check with them a little later today. I'm sure things are fine for them because they're not at the center of things. All right, moving along. There's so much that's been happening. I kept finding things to talk about, and as this usually goes, I won't get to all of it. But I want to get to something here up front before I move any further because... it kind of plays into what we're watching happen all around us right now. And it also sort of plays into how many of your liberal friends relate to the world around them. Because I've said this before recently that we watch those of us who just are observing, watching life go by and making observations about things like me. We've noticed that they say that President Trump is literally Voldemort, that and they compare the time we're living in the United States right now to which Harry Potter book and the scenario going on in that particular book. They compare the two things because they relate to these fantasies and they relate to the entertainment industry. They relate everything to movies. They relate things to more obscurely to video games. And I thought, wow, there seems to be a parallel going on here, and I don't think it's a big stretch. But in order to illustrate the parallel, I need to play a bit of sound for you. It's less than a minute long. And it comes from the movie The Incredibles.
Oh, come on! You gotta admit, this is cool! Just like a movie! The robot will emerge dramatically, do some damage, throngs of screaming people, and just when all hope is lost, Syndrome will save the day! I'll be a bigger hero than you ever were.
You mean you killed off real heroes so that you could pretend to be one?
Oh, I'm real. Real enough to defeat you! And I did it without your precious gifts, your oh-so-special powers. I'll give them heroics. I'll give them the most spectacular heroics anyone's ever seen! And when I'm old and I've had my fun, I'll sell my inventions so that everyone can be superheroes. Everyone can be super. And when everyone's super, no one will be.
The villain Syndrome in The Incredibles, if you haven't seen The Incredibles, just take a couple hours sometime soon and watch it. It's great comic book stuff. It's just, it's one of the best things Disney's put out in a long, long time, Disney and Pixar. And it's old now, but it teaches what I think is a fairly valuable lesson. And Syndrome, the villain, was spurned by Mr. Incredible when he was a kid, and has been and that insult to him has been festering the whole time, and now he's getting even and capturing the entire Incredibles family. He's got them all held captive, and he's going to attack a big city and then come in and rescue everyone. And his plan is to be the world's greatest superhero. But in order to do what he wants, he has to get rid of all of the rest of them. And when he's had his fun and he's old and doesn't want to play anymore, he'll sell his inventions to the public. And everybody will be super. And when everyone is super, no one is. And I see an interesting parallel going on right now with leftist politics. We're watching politicians purposefully tear down parts of American cities, allowing violent anarchists to harm citizens, then immediately releasing those anarchists from jail after they're arrested to go out and do more damage and cause more injury. We're watching them turn a blind eye to the violence, and they're blaming the one person who really is standing against violence and telling the governments in these states and cities that they have to get tough on these people, or it's just going to get worse. Now, these people aren't planning on selling anything. That's the one thing about the rant from Syndrome that is really, in a real world, out of place. Because of liberals in the entertainment industry, they blame things like this on business people and tycoons, conservatives. This is the guy who's going to profit. He's going to make profit off of his inventions. And once his inventions are out there for everybody to use, then nobody is considered super anymore or special. But that's not how real conservative people actually live their lives. They don't do that. They understand the principles of conservatism, and they wouldn't do that. But those who can't grasp it or who can't participate for whatever reason, whether it be morals or mentality or whatever, they assign these nefarious ideas and thoughts to people on the other side of the political spectrum, and they demonize them. And we're watching the leftists, the people on the left right now, allow destruction and mayhem in America. And please understand that when you see these pictures, they're talking about just a couple of city blocks in each one of these cities. But the problem is that these mayors and these governors are not taking a firm stand against it and stopping it. I've used the illustration in the past of being in the grocery store and seeing some toddler pitching a fit on the floor and their parent ignoring them. Well, they're making everyone else in the place uncomfortable, screaming, yelling, throwing things, carrying on. And the parent is just like, oh, well, what are you going to do? Well, the idiot parent should actually take some firm action and draw a line and make that child understand something painful is going to happen when you cross this line because we don't do this. Well, these liberals, these leftists who are in charge in these cities and these states are treating the anarchists like rowdy children in the supermarket. The only difference is when they throw things around, people are injured and sometimes killed. And their objective in doing all of this is to take control of the country and to relegate the people who really have been making a difference and growing our economy and improving life for the people of America, to relegate them to backseat and possibly non-status altogether. And they promise everyone things they know they can't deliver in order to get that done. We're watching the people on the left right now caution people about voting for Trump because if they do, then this all of this will keep on going. All of this destruction will keep on happening. It'll just get worse because these are his people out there doing that in spite of the fact that there is absolutely no documentation, no evidence, no proof whatsoever that that's what's happening. And to the contrary, we're seeing in city after city, well, particularly Portland, we're seeing studies show that, yes, it is Antifa and the anarchists who are behind all of this. And it's organized, and it's planned, and it's been planned. So the progressive people in our government at the federal and state level are playing a dangerous game with your country. They're playing a dangerous game with the United States of America. And in doing so, they're endangering and sometimes harming and sometimes killing the people of the United States of America. Just for power. Just for control. Because they want to be the heroes. They want to be the people in charge who care for this country. Because, as this little broken record has said so many times, they wholeheartedly believe they are both intellectually and morally superior to everyone who believes otherwise. Bless their hearts. They are driving this big bus of the United States of America off a cliff just for the sake of getting political power back in their hands again. We're watching this happen every day as we watch the news go by. And as we, people who have who understand that we can't trust the mainstream news, as we dig to find what's going on, we see more and more and more evidence that the progressives in government are playing this dangerous game for power and control. Behind the scenes, they've been dumbing down our education system so that the younger generation won't understand what's happening. They've been programming our kids to believe lies that have been told by leftists for generations. And every time they've been implemented, they've failed. And every time, they've always said the same thing. Well, the wrong people were in charge. Or that wasn't real socialism. Or that wasn't real Marxism. But honest people who do their homework realize that's not altogether true. It was real socialism. And it was real Marxism. Because the end goal of both were accomplished in every case. That the people who were supposed to be in charge, the elite, ended up being the ones with all the food and all the comfort and everything they needed. And all of the people that they fooled into voting for their plans ended up having very little of anything. All so that they could be the heroes because the rest were too stupid to know any better. We can't let this happen to the United States of America. It's the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, the 16th day of September, 2020. Hopefully you're having a great day so far, wherever you may be, whenever you may be listening. If you're on Facebook Live, hi, welcome to the party. If you haven't listened to Facebook Live, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central every morning on the Daily Perspective podcast Facebook page. I usually remember. There's some mornings when I realize after the first segment, oh yeah, I never went live. And that's usually because I'm stumbling over things as we get rolling, and I just get distracted. Ooh, shiny. Well, I don't know if you saw this or not, but Joe Biden accidentally pushed his running mate, Senator Kamala Harris, to the top of the ticket just a day after she appeared to similarly promote herself. He said, Harris-Biden administration is going to relaunch that effort and keep pushing it further to make it easier for military spouses and veterans to find meaningful careers. Yada, yada, yada. A Harris-Biden administration? Really? That's interesting.
Harris-Biden administration is going to relaunch that effort and keep pushing further to make it easier for military spouses and veterans to find meaningful...
A Harris-Biden administration? A Harris-Biden administration.
Harris-Biden administration is going to relaunch that effort and keep pushing further to make it easier for military...
Now, I know that creepy, sleepy, sleazy Uncle Joe here has issues getting his words mixed up. If you really want to be entertained, watch some of the videos that are popping up right now with his interpreter for the deaf. The guy, you know, he's doing sign language, trying to keep up with him when he gets into some of these word salad statements. It's actually kind of funny, but this is not that. I really don't think it is. And the reason I don't think it is because of this.
You need to make sure you have a president in the White House who actually sees you, who understands your needs, who understands the dignity of your work, and who has your back. A Harris administration together with Joe Biden.
A Harris administration together with Joe Biden.
A Harris administration together with Joe Biden.
During a campaign rally in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, President Donald Trump launched an attack on Harris. He claimed Americans would never want her to become president. He told his supporters, people don't like her, nobody likes her, she could never be the first woman president, she could never be. That would be an insult to our country. And I think that's proving to be true, because she and some of her team went to a restaurant or in the Miami area, and the people in there, they were very unhappy. Very unhappy that she was there. The owner, who wasn't aware of the visit, said it wasn't planned, and he was unhappy with the visit. You see, most of the Latino people in that area don't like Joe Biden. They don't like Kamala Harris because of Joe Biden's stand on Cuba. He would return us to what's actually been going on, what actually was happening in the Obama administration. And all of this talk about the Harris administration, this Harris-Biden administration, I don't think that's coincidence. I think there's been meetings. I think there's been talk. I think this stuff is just slipping out. It's in their brains. They've been talking about this. And now they're letting things slip. Much like Maxine Waters. You know, you remember Maxine Waters screaming impeach 45?
Impeach 45!
Yeah. I think she was screaming impeach 45 from the get-go because the Democrats had meetings as soon as the election was over, and they decided, well, our key to getting rid of him now is to impeach him. So all efforts go into impeachment. We don't talk about this publicly, but we're going to impeach the guy. And then we start hearing
impeach 45.
And I think she just decided, oh, well, they all think I'm a loose cannon anyway. I'll just be one. But I think Biden and Harris are letting some things slip that have been the topic of serious conversation. A top Florida Democrat strategist said he's shocked at Joe Biden's failure to win over Latino voters in Florida. Let's go back to that. He says, not only am I surprised, I'm shocked, I'm aghast, it's perplexing. So says Ferdinand Amandi, a Democratic strategist and Florida pollster, in an interview with Yahoo News. He goes on to say there were plenty of times and plenty of opportunities to have addressed the situation earlier rather than trying to salvage it at the 11th down. 11th down? Isn't that supposed to be the 11th hour? Okay. The poll, which surveyed 500 voters, shows Biden beating President Donald Trump in the reliably Democratic Miami-Dade County by 17 points. That, though, is 13 points below the number Hillary Clinton bested Trump by in the 2016 election. Amandi expressed concern that this could spell disaster for Biden in the Sunshine State, saying if Biden underperforms in what should be one of his strongest counties, and is certainly the largest county for Democratic votes in the state of Florida, it might imperil his chances of winning Florida unless there's a massive white voter exodus from Trump in other parts of the state. Now, concerns over Biden's lagging Latino support came to the fore last week as other polls revealed Trump ahead of Biden with Latinos in Florida by 4 points. On Sunday, Biden campaign surrogate Representative Val Demings responded to the news by saying that the former VP would be taking no one for granted in the state. Of course, she has to say that because he's already shown that he's taking everybody that's a minority for granted. Remember what he said about, if you ain't voting for me, you ain't black. He's taking everybody who is a minority for granted. Though Clinton did lose Florida in 2016, she did win 60% of the Latino vote, while Biden has the support of only 46% of Latinos there, according to the most recent polls. CNN's Harry Enten also wrote yesterday that Biden's problem with Latino voters goes beyond Florida and has shown up in his polling analysis going back to June. Biden's leading Trump among Latino voters nationally by about 28 points, which is significantly lower than the 37-point advantage Hillary Clinton had over Trump with Latinos in the 2016 election. The Biden and Trump campaigns have spent tens of millions of dollars in Florida and are looking to continue to flood the airwaves in the final weeks leading up to Election Day. At this point in the race, the Trump campaign has bought 16 million more in airtime. Biden's flagging performance in Florida prompted former New York City mayor and failed 2020 presidential candidate Michael Bloomberg to promise to spend $100 million to elect Biden. $100 million. Now remember, Biden has said he would return the Obama relationship with Cuba. He's going to go back to that. And that ignores, Cuba ignores the human rights of their people. And that would mean that we would be ignoring their abuses to the human rights and the communist oppression of their people. He said so. Let me see if I've got an exact date on this. Let me see. Let me pull this back. This is, I'm looking for a date and timestamp on this article and I'm not finding it. That's good. That's very helpful. Thank you so much from The Hill. It's an article from The Hill, thehill.com. I'll put it in show notes today. Former VP Joe Biden said he'd return to Obama-era policies of engagement with Cuba and reverse the Trump administration's sanctions if he wins the White House race in November. Quote, in large part, I would go back. I'd insist they keep the commitments they said they would make when we, in fact, set the policy in place. You remember that in 2017, President Trump reimposed economic sanctions on Cuba, imposed travel restrictions that had been relaxed under former President Obama, and largely abandoned diplomatic engagement with the country. Those moves were part of the Trump administration's efforts to pressure Cuba over its human rights record and its support for Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, whose presidency the United States considers illegitimate and should, because the people have actually voted for someone else they want to be president, and Maduro won't step aside. Well, now this is back before Biden actually became the Democrat candidate, excuse me. But it's still his policy. It's still his belief. It's ignorant. It's lunatic. And the Hispanic people of America recognize it for what it is. I think I shared the story with you at one time in the past, but and I was reminded of it recently in a family visit. My mother and my uncle and some other family members went on a cruise a couple of years ago. And that cruise was to Cuba. And they were all very interested in what they would see there because travel's been restricted for so long. Well, they went and they came back talking about how depressing it was. Because there was no color. There were no flowers. The people's homes weren't decorated. They're piecing together old cars to try to keep things on the road. It's depressing. And my mom said it was interesting the first morning when the excursion groups took off, because everybody was babbling with excitement about going to see this place, and they'd all been told about the beauty of the place and the beauty of the people and the yada yada and the culture and the, you know, this and that. And at the end of the day, they all came back to the ship very quiet. Because the life they're used to here in the United States of America, the greatest nation on earth, is what they compared everything in Cuba to. And there was no comparison. The neighbors didn't have flowers in their window boxes. They didn't have window boxes. There was nothing like we would accept as normal here. Because under communist rule, if your neighbor can't afford the same flowers you've got out front, then you can't have them either. And that's just one small example. That was every day they were there. They saw more and more examples. And that's why Hispanics in America don't like Joe Biden. They don't want that here. Looking at a lot of travel stuff lately. My wife and I just discovered this YouTube channel, the couple named Kara and Ken. They're from the Nashville area. 2 years ago, they made this commitment. They decided they were going to explore their hobby and just make it their life. And their hobby was travel hacks. Ken was this... He got fascinated with how to use bonus points on credit card accounts and airline miles and things like that. And they came up with a plan to travel around the world and to visit 100 countries before the year 2020 or by the year 2020. And they accomplished their goal. And they did it using bonus points and airline miles. And... there was a bit of outlay from time to time for lodging and always for food, but they managed to do this amazing trip. And I watched one of the videos last night where he spelled out exactly how they did this Southeast Asia tour, this particular segment of their plan, and how they used, let's see, they applied for a particular credit card which gave you... I forget how many. It was 100,000 or 150,000 points when you sign up. And they basically parlayed those points into flight miles, into hotel stays, into all kinds of things. They ended up, to get those points, you had to spend $3,000 on the card. But that's easy to do if you just have a life and you decide, okay, well, I'll just pay for all the stuff I normally pay for with the card and then pay the card off. So instead of it coming out of your checking account, it goes to the card, and then in your checking account, you pay the card off. You do that every month. You're not accruing any interest. You're just using the card to get the points. And they started that about 5 years ago, and now they've got a net worth of well over $500,000, and they're living off of the revenue from YouTube. And... one of the things along the way that they encountered was, since they travel the world, in the last year or so, they hit the COVID wall. And it was an interesting trip for them. They ended up spending some time in one place, quarantining, and waiting to be able to travel because of the nature of everything being shut down. And there was one place that they went to, which when I saw the video, I thought, well, doggone it, before I die, I got to go there. And they, while they were there, they were looking at the news on their phones and realized, oh my gosh, we've got to get out of here tomorrow morning, dark tomorrow morning, and get back to the main city and get back to the main international airport, or we're stuck here for who knows how long, because that was the nature of the travel. And the panic that ensued as a result of that has affected the whole world, and you're familiar with it. You're in the middle of it now. Odds are you have to wear a mask so practically everywhere you go now because of this. It's affected all of our lives. Well, we're seeing the downturn on this, and the downturn is becoming sharper. The numbers of new cases is dropping. The number of fatalities has been dropping for a while. We are on the downward trend. Sidebar, we're also about to hit flu season. And I think some politicians have learned from COVID-19 how to control people with fear. And they're going to use the flu season as the next card they lay on the table. Just file that wherever you file things. But here's a little ray of hope. The University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, scientists there found the smallest biological molecule that completely and specifically neutralizes SARS-CoV-2. That's the virus that causes COVID-19. The antibody is 10 times smaller than a full-sized antibody. It's a little bit, it packs a punch, and has been used to create the drug AB8, according to a report published by the researchers in the journal Cell this Monday. The researchers say the drug is a potential preventative treatment against SARS-CoV-2. Co-author John Mellors, chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Pitt and UPMC, says AB8 not only has potential as therapy for COVID-19, but it also could be used to keep people from getting SARS-CoV-2 infections. Antibodies of larger size have worked against other infectious diseases and have been well tolerated, giving us hope that it could be an effective treatment for patients with COVID-19 and for protection of those who have never had the infection and are not immune. The drug's been tested on mice and hamsters, been shown to be highly effective in preventing and treating the SARS-CoV-2 infection. Researchers also say the drug does not bind to human cells, which they say suggests there may not be an adverse effect or side effects in people. Researchers are examining how the drug could be administered, saying it may be inhaled as an aerosol or delivered through a superficial injection. Another team of researchers at the University of Texas Medical Branch Center for Biodefense and Emerging Diseases at Galveston National Laboratory tested AB8 and found that the drug blocked the virus from entering cells. In trials, mice treated with AB8 had tenfold less of the amount of infectious virus compared to those who were untreated. The development comes after the world's largest clinical trial for a COVID-19 vaccine being developed by drug maker AstraZeneca was put on hold. You remember the story that happened, I think, last week. Somebody in the trial got sick. And when that happens in these drug trials, they put the brakes on everything. Everything. Because they have to know why. It could be something innocuous, but they still have to know why. Of course, the mainstream press, being what it is, will, of course, assume the worst. Will write horror stories and in political circles, they will blame the president of the United States for rushing things when actually the usual process with the usual results is what's actually happening. Liberals have been fighting against all the attempts to reopen our economy. They're saying it's irresponsible to allow any public activity until a vaccine is developed and distributed. Apparently, any public activity other than peaceful protests. Now that it seems possible, maybe, that such a vaccine may be ready for distribution, a lot of those same people have shifted gears, saying that any vaccine released under the oversight of the Trump administration is not to be trusted anyway. And now Bill Gates has joined the chorus of liberals actively attempting to undermine public confidence in any potential vaccine and thus discourage participation in a vaccination program. In a story from TheBlaze.com, we learned that in an interview with Bloomberg TV, Gates said he doesn't trust either the FDA, which is responsible for public oversight of vaccines, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention when it comes to providing responsible oversight over the development of a COVID-19 vaccine. Quote, "We saw with the completely bungled plasma treatments that when you start pressuring people to say optimistic things, they can go completely off the rails. The FDA lost a lot of credibility there." The comments were an apparent reference to controversy over the effectiveness of blood plasma in treatment of the coronavirus. He went on to say, "Historically, just like the CDC was viewed as the best in the world, the FDA had that same reputation as a top-notch regulator, but there's been some cracks with some of the things they've said at the commissioner level." He did say he expects eventually a safe and effective vaccine to emerge from the process, but he didn't elaborate on what might cause him to put trust back into the FDA or CDC's oversight of the process. Well, I'll tell you what would give him trust. Any president besides Donald Trump. That's what would give Bill Gates trust. And by the way, why are we turning to Bill Gates for an opinion on medicine? Why are we turning to the founder of Microsoft, a computer geek, a billionaire computer geek? Yeah, he's been involved in philanthropic causes. He's been involved in medicine. He's been involved in things like that. But we can see from this particular article that his judgment is deeply weighted towards the liberal side. And he says things about, you know, making rosy statements about what's happening, that's inappropriate. Well, let me break a little something to you, Mr. Gates. You know full well, as the CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation, that the image you project to those who work for you, for those people who work in your management, and the rank and file who work for you, you know that you, every day, every minute of every day, always put your best foot forward. You always present a positive image. You always, under all circumstances, spin everything to the positive. You do this. Your people do this. Your management does this. Because if you want your multi-billion dollar corporation to produce more billions of dollars, then you need to constantly keep people positive. Because negativity does not produce results. Negativity results only in hand-wringing and everything stalling so that nothing is accomplished. It results in fear. People are afraid for their jobs. They're afraid to go into work. They're afraid to cross any kind of line with anyone. And as a result, production falters. Excellence goes out the window. And you know this. You know this. You have a company that is an example of this. And yet, when it comes to politics, you assign nefarious value to a president who understands the value of a positive outlook for the people who follow him and the rest of them who don't. People who keep fanning the flames of negativity are doing so for political reasons and sometimes just because they would prefer to see everything go south, because they like being scared. And that in itself is a psychosis. And we can't let that be what directs our nation. Time to jump into the last segment for the day. We're going to stick to COVID while we're at it. Coming from over at newsbusters.org. Media outlets routinely shame anyone who can be accused of taking the coronavirus threat too lightly, that is. But it's rare to see anyone punished for dramatically overplaying the threat. In his Fourth Watch email newsletter, former CNN digital editor Steve Krakauer strongly questioned the Daily Beast. How did this get published? The Daily Beast on teachers that died with COVID. The Daily Beast posted a misleading clickbait headline on September 9th. It said at least four teachers have died of COVID-19 since the start of the school year, with the added subhead of heartbreaking in all capital letters. It wasn't even their own reporting, but a hyperbolic caricature of a report from the Associated Press. Ah, the AP. The Beast story describes the news as an ominous sign of what's to come as students return to the classroom across the country. A characterization sure to provide maximum impact with the reader. The truth, however, is different than the article makes it seem. The AP story describes them as teacher deaths, but also makes clear that the teachers in the story died through COVID-19 factors that were completely separate from returning to in-person school. For one teacher, it was through church. Another, it was summer football practice. The teachers in the story neither contracted coronavirus at school, nor were even known to have spread it to anyone since the school year began. The Associated Press's Jim Salter and Lee Willingham told some sad stories, but disconnected from students arriving for classes. Ashley DeMarinis, that's her name, Ashley DeMarinis, was just 34 when she died Sunday after 3 weeks in the hospital. She taught social skills and special education at John Evans Middle School in Potosi, Missouri. In Potosi, in-person classes started August 24th. DeMarinis was already hospitalized by then, but had been in the school preparing for the year a couple of weeks earlier, her sister Jennifer Heisenbuttel said. Superintendent Max McCall said contact tracing determined she had no close contact with any teachers, students, or staff. In Oxford, Mississippi, 42-year-old Nakoma James taught at a middle school and helped coach high school football. He died August 6th during the first week of classes, but was self-quarantining when teachers and students returned to the classroom. Krakauer noted professor and writer Zeynep Tufekci took the Beast to task for its misrepresentation to their readers, saying the info ecology has switched from underplaying the threat to scaremongering. Human nature plus business incentives. It's easy to laugh at QAnon folks who fear widespread cult kidnappings of children, but alarmism directed at children is eternal. It's become difficult to have an evidence-based conversation about this, but we must try, because children are also being gravely harmed by closed schools. And that's an important note we should remember. We're finding from research that children are probably at the bottom of the scale for risk. But what they are at risk of is the psychological effects of not being back at school again. Not having that social interaction that they've become used to. Not having to pull them out of all of that and to change all of their lives at this age is not good for them. It really isn't. It's been proven again and again and again. And yet, if the progressives in government have their way, things will not return to normal for quite some time, if they do at all. One of the reasons that progressives love Dr. Anthony Fauci is because he apparently doesn't have filters, or his filters are cracked, because he says some things he should never say. Remember what I said about a CEO putting a positive face on things to promote his company forward. Anthony Fauci doesn't do that at all. I've described him before as Mr. Worst Case Scenario. Don't get me wrong. You do have to understand the worst case scenario. You have to plan and can't lie to yourself when you plan. You have to evaluate. How could this go horribly wrong? If you're wise, you do that. Those who are people of faith understand the principle of counting the cost before building the house. You have to. Not just in how much the materials are going to cost you, not much how much the labor is going to cost you, but all of the cost. What's the potential downside? And as a result of doing that, we, just as regular folks, if we're launching into a project, just at our level, just say you're going to remodel your kitchen. You budget not just for how much the raw costs are going to be, but you give yourself a little bit more just in case. What if you open that wall up and find out you've got to replace pipes? What if you open up this other wall over here and find out there is rot or termites? What if you find out underneath all of that tile you've been meaning to pull up for years, the floors are going bad because there's been a slow leak for 20 years in this house? What if, like in our place, you discover that somebody, when they built the house 40-something years ago, they drove a nail through an electrical cable, and it's been slowly sputtering and arcing for all those years? You have to take into account things you can't grasp at this moment that could happen, and then add a little bit extra to the budget to cover the unforeseen. And as part of that, you consider a worst-case scenario. So I'm not saying that considering the worst-case scenario is wrong. I'm saying that when you stand in front of the cameras and the microphones of the leftist news media, that you consider carefully what you say. Because within the walls of your organization, of your governmental organization, discussing the worst case scenario and the, yes, I can see the need to possibly to wear masks for the next 5 years. If you say that around the table in a meeting, it's one thing. But if you say it to the press, which thrives on controversy and sensationalism and is striving every day to get as many eyes focused on it and listening to it as it can, because that means revenue for them, then you're giving them raw meat to use to draw in the viewership and the listenership. You have to be very careful, because the mainstream press isn't concerned about morality and about what's right and what's wrong. The mainstream press is concerned about what is the most sensational thing they can print, because that's what's going to make them the most money. They wrap it all in a noble cause and say that they are there to hold the feet of the powerful to the fire. They're there to speak truth to power, when it is nothing of the sort. They are there to attract as much attention as possible, because the more listeners and viewers they have, the more money they can charge for advertising, and the more money they make. Make no mistake about it, when you're speaking to the press, you have to be very careful, very focused, and very concise. And Dr. Anthony Fauci tends to fail on those counts. He is a brilliant man. He is, I guess you could say, at the top of his game because of where he is in his position. But it doesn't mean he's the smartest guy on the block when it comes to dealing with the press. And as a result of his inability to filter properly, a lot of people are frightened who need not be frightened. Life is returning back to normal in America as people realize a lot of this crap is unnecessary, and they're going about their lives doing as little as possible to comply with the regulations imposed upon them. But there are people who have a psychological need to be afraid. And those people are believing every word that comes out of the news media and out of their progressive politicians, whose motivation is power and control. You and I, we need to be the voices of sanity. So get out there and be sane today. And let's get back together tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. God bless you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.